Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, February 19th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Expelled former ZANU-PF stalwart Didmus Mutasa says the center of power has moved in the party as pages of suspected Joyce Mujuru allies continue.
There's no doubt from what is going on at the present moment that the center of their power is going to be the first lady, and we find that very absurd.
A Bulawayo High Court judge reserves judgment in a case where an official in President Robert Mugabe's office has taken over a farm in Matabeleland South, prejudicing hundreds of villagers who have been benefiting from income-generating projects at the farm.
The basis of the application was that Ebenezer Trust has been in peaceful possession of the farm, having been granted permission to remain there by the government.
And analysts discussed the European Union's apparent sea change towards President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party following the EU's move this week to start providing direct support to the government of Zimbabwe after a decade of sanctions.
Didmus Mutasa, ZANU-PF's former secretary for administration, like many in the ruling party, had become a permanent fixture in the organization's structures. But yesterday, things changed when he was expelled from the ranks of a party he has belonged to for almost his whole life. Just like surprises never cease to occur, the former ZANU-PF stalwart, defiant as ever, today sensationally claimed that the center of power in ZANU-PF has shifted with First Lady Grace Mugabe now firmly in control of party affairs. The 28th 5th Ordinary Session of the Politburo yesterday expelled Mutasa and Hurungwe West Member of Parliament Themba Mliswa following the First Lady's return from Singapore, where she was receiving medical attention. Party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo said the two were fired for insubordination. But Mutasa, in an exclusive interview with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, says he does not recognize the expulsion from the party.
I am not a part of that organization. I remained in the original ZANU-PF where they don't belong, and they cannot expel me from that organization which they have gotten out of. So I am asking, unfortunately you are not one of them, which organization did they expel me from? And because they belong to the other organization, I'm contending that they did not expel me at all. I'm still a member of the original ZANU-PF, and that's it.
And about this alleged expulsion, have you received any communication from your other colleagues?
Nobody has ever written to me to say that. They were wanting to put me through a disciplinary committee. All that we understood from the newspapers, no one of them wrote to say I was to be subjected to that disciplinary committee. We gathered through the press that they were waiting the arrival back into the country of the First Lady. They never intimated to me that view. And so we are living in a country of guessing what our leadership wants to do. And so we find that a little bit worrying. There's no doubt from what is going on at the present moment that the center of their power is going to be the First Lady. And we find that very absurd. It has never happened anywhere that kind of arrangement should be the case. One of us who talked about it way back, Jabulani Sibanda, intimated that what had happened at that time was a bedroom coup. And he was dragged to court, and he is, I think, waiting to be sentenced.
If you say the power is shifting, are you saying Mr. Mugabe is no longer in charge?
I can't say that specifically, because I don't work with them. I only do that from observing what is happening. You see, at yesterday's Politburo meeting, the First Lady sat as a member of the Presidium. But you see, in terms of our constitution, the Secretary for Women Affairs, which the late Mai Mugabe, Sally Mugabe, never sat at the top table. Chamu Muchinguri, who had that position before, never sat at the top table. But when she comes and in her first Politburo meeting, she sits at the top table, well, it gives us an assumption that they are probably preparing for her to be the center of power. We don't really know. We are only guessing because they never explain anything.
That was former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. For Perspective, a reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached out to political analyst Dumisani Nkomo.
I think it's commendable that he's showing resilience, and he might be right that his expulsion is illegal. But what is unclear is that he's now unwanted within ZANU-PF. And historically, whenever somebody is unwanted within ZANU-PF, they usually dispose, you know, of such a person until such a person becomes necessary and useful for their own political end.
He says that he will contest the by-election in his constituency. How do you see him faring?
I think he's got a fair number of sympathizers. I don't know whether he will win at the end of the day, knowing that he doesn't now have the advantage of, you know, incumbency. He doesn't have access to the organs of the state. It might be difficult for him to win because there's so many odds that are stacked against him. But on the other hand, he now has many sympathizers, you know, people view him as a victim. And in Zimbabwe, politics of victimhood, you know, is quite popular. So he stands quite a good chance, even though the odds are heavily stacked against him.
And lastly, Mr. Nkomo, how do you see the Mujuru formation proceeding from here?
I think they won't act immediately. I think they will measure what is happening. They will observe. They will strategize. You know, probably they will take the strategy of the line, which doesn't just attack, but probably they'll want to lie low for some time, maybe, and also watch the health of the president until such a time that it is strategic to mount a counterattack.
That was a political analyst, Dumisani Nkomo, speaking on the line with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo from Bulawayo.
President Robert Mugabe has appointed Attorney Prince Machaya as the country's new Attorney General. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation is reporting that the appointment by the president, who has just left the country to attend a Southern African Development Community Troika meeting on Lesotho in South Africa, is in terms of Section 114, Subsection 1 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe. Machaya, who has been Deputy Attorney General since December 2007, is expected to expedite the alignment of the country's new constitution and other pieces of legislation. He replaces his former boss, Johannes Tomana, who is now the country's prosecutor general.
A Bulawayo High Court judge has reserved judgment in a case where an official in President Robert Mugabe's office has taken over a farm in Matabeleland South, prejudicing hundreds of villagers who have been benefiting from income-generating projects, a school, and a church at the farm. The dispute over the farm started in December when Ronnie Mashingaidze, an official in the president's office, said he had an offer letter to take over Maleme Farm owned by the Cunningham family. Early this month, the dispute took an ugly turn when police descended on the farm and chased away the villagers. Mashingaize then took over their produce, including chicken, which he is allegedly selling at markets in Bulawayo. A Christian organization, Ebenezer Trust, which has been facilitating the project, took the matter to court, seeking Mashingaize's ouster from the farm. Today, Justice Nokutula Moyo reserved her judgment, which she is expected to hand down within the next 2 weeks. We reached Josphat Chuma, who is representing the Ebenezer Trust and Chief Masuku of Matobo, on today's proceedings.
There is a need for us as young people to have unity in diversity. What we can say, we need to find a common ground where we can unite and take control of the future, because we believe that as young people, the future belongs to us and we need to control it.
And there was a time for comments from the audience. So what were some of the sentiments?
There were people from Zanu-PF trying to protect the regime, trying to run away from reality. So in their response, they were trying also to say we should be patriotic unconditionally, we should remain resolute, unequivocally clear, no matter what we are facing, we should rally behind ZANU-PF. But for other people who commented, they also attributing to the issue of action, that there is need for young people to embark on action, which is peaceful, not violent. We can embark on petitions, demonstrations, and so on.
Do you think that moving forward that young people will have a response to these issues?
The panel was assisted to get the ball rolling, because we were listening to what people were saying. I think most of the solution actually came from the people.
I would like to apologize, sorry, for the mix-up. That was not Josphat Chuma as reported. We are going to give you the tape by Josphat Chuma, a lawyer who's representing the Ebenezer Trust in due course.
The basis of the application was that Ebenezer Trust has been in peaceful possession of the funds, having been granted permission to remain there by the government for the type of work that they have been doing. When Section 5 was issued in 2003, which was a notice of intention to acquire, the owner then was Mrs. Cunningham, actually made representation to the government to say she was involved in projects with the community, and she wished to continue with those projects. Those were outgrower schemes at that time for rearing ostriches, which ostriches were then exported, and the communities were actually paid for rearing those ostriches. It developed into something bigger, where they actually had to apply for a permit to build a dam. They were given water rights, and the building of that dam cost about $700,000. They applied to build a training institution, which cost about $500,000. The government even assisted by saying that, in fact, there should be connection of electricity. So through the rural electrification scheme, the whole area was electrified. And then the chalets, where people can actually camp site, where people can go there and camp and pay a fee. And there are fields where people are trained, these students, where they train not only to keep chickens, not only to grow crops, and many other things.
That was lawyer Josphat Chuma speaking to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
analysts tackle the issue of the Zimbabwe-EU relations.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon today called the violent actions of the Islamic State and Boko Haram a grave threat to international peace and security, but said governments around the world are often to blame for fostering the appeal of the terrorist groups to the downtrodden. The UN chief told a White House-sponsored anti-terrorism summit in Washington, oppression, corruption, and justice are greenhouses for resentment.
Qatar recalled its ambassador to Egypt for consultations today in a widening rift over Egypt's Air Force carrying out airstrikes against Islamic State militants in Libya earlier this week.
And the World Health Organization says anti-Ebola efforts in West Africa are being undermined by unsafe burials and a failure to identify dozens of Ebola cases.
Zimbabwe recently hosted a delegation from Western countries, signaling a thawing of previously frosty relationship. Potential investors from Britain and France, countries in the European Union bloc that had imposed targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe over its alleged human rights and other abuses, met with officials to explore opportunities there. Rubber stamping this change was the recent signing of a $270 million deal between Zimbabwe and the EU, essentially ending a 13-year direct engagement between the two. For perspective on this apparent sea change, Studio 7's Ndimiyake Nwakalele spoke with United Kingdom-based analysts Dr. Alex Magaisa, a professor at Kent University, and Dr. Nkululeko Siwanda, a professor at Huddersfield University. Siwanda says Western countries' interest in Zimbabwe is strategic.
The golden rule in international relations is that you look after your own interests. They have taken a clear consideration of the issues over the past 13 years. And in my opinion, it's not so much that the Zimbabwean or that the MDC has failed, but, you know, the fact that the European Union, like any other economic bloc here, they're looking after number one, in particular in relation to the challenge that is being posed by China and lately by Russia as well.
Dr. Sibanda, do you agree with that? And if so, what is the European interest in Zimbabwe? And why now come back?
I think that, yes, the question, China is Zimbabwe's second largest trading partner, following South Africa, just behind it in terms of overall trade when you compare imports and exports. And you're absolutely right. The fact that they've been able to hold out for the last 15 years and China's growth in terms of the Zimbabwe economy has been partly because the EU has been willing to take the losses on Zimbabwe while China is gaining. But at this moment, they have noticed that the political partner they've been working with in Zimbabwe were not improving the situation, even in terms of their number one interest, or also in terms of what Dr. Magaisa refers to, and correctly so, as the excuse for international relations, which is whether or not it's about human rights and so forth. The Europeans completely believe that their cooperation work with through NGOs and through the opposition, as led by the MDC, has not been able even then to help them pursue their interests in terms of poverty reduction, in terms of democracy and human rights. Just a year ago, they were making the argument China shouldn't be allowed to invest as much as it does Africa because it doesn't worry about the excuses of coming in for human rights and so forth. But now it is very clear, and I think Dr. Magaisa must accept that the MDC, given the level of support it received from the EU, has completely failed its partners and itself and probably the democracy project in the country.
Dr. Magaisa, obviously you want to respond to that?
Well, I mean, let me make it very clear. I'm not speaking on behalf of the MDC, neither am I trying to defend them. It is very clear that the opposition movement in Zimbabwe at this point in time has not done what many people would have expected it to do. There's been so much disunity, so much conflict at a time when ZANU-PF has been at its weakest. And I think what the EU has done is it has observed the politics in Zimbabwe. Yes, there are problems that the MDC have caused upon themselves, but they've also realized, I think, a real political fact about politics in Zimbabwe, that ZANU-PF is powerful. ZANU-PF has control of the most important facets of power in Zimbabwe, and no one, not the MDC, has been able, and perhaps will be able to do so in the foreseeable future. And for me, the other dimension about the EU is they're looking at the effect of the fact that President Mugabe's presidency is reaching its sunset and there's going to be a dawn of a new era, and they're preparing for that in order to secure their own interests.
One of the first things that Finance Minister Patrick Chinamaso raised was the sanctions. So will it be able to arm twist the EU and all the other countries that have imposed targeted sanctions to now, as a bargaining chip, drop them? Dr. Sibanda.
I think that, yes, the sanctions will go. If you look at the flow of trade, the imports and exports between Zimbabwe and EU, you will see that they are going towards the point of convergence. And at the point where they converge, both parties enjoy what I would call an equilibrium. At that point, the power structure shifts. Then negotiations can be done either way.
Dr. Magaisa, how do you see Zimbabwe playing its cards? And also, it seems as though you have delegations from France, from Britain, still exploring their possibilities when there's very little clarity in terms of the protection of their investments.
Whether or not Zimbabwe has an upper hand is a question that will be decided by time. But what Zimbabwe needs to do is to be able to extract the most beneficial agreements and deals with both China and the EU, because the EU is competing with China for access to resources. What Zimbabwe needs to do is to appreciate that it has the power to engage these two competitors, and indeed others like Russia, which are also coming through, to extract the best deal for its people.
That was Nkululeko Sibanda, a professor at Huddersfield University in the United Kingdom. Earlier, you heard from Dr. Alex Magaisa, a professor at Kent University, also in the UK. Both spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele.
Now that Western countries are re-engaging Zimbabwe, many are looking at the United States, which has also imposed targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe. Senior political analyst Marion Tupi of the Washington-based Cato Institute says that is unlikely.
Don't expect that the United States will dismantle the sanctions against the Zimbabwean regime, and I'm only sorry that the sanctions are not even tighter. They are quite porous and weak. But the United States will not remove those sanctions, I think, that as long as Mugabe and ZANU-PF remain in power.
Even in light of the fact that the European Union as a bloc has been slowly reviewing the sanctions against the targeted officials in Zimbabwe, leaving really on the list President Mugabe now and his wife, does the U.S. still have legitimacy to not drop those sanctions or at least review them?
I cannot explain it. I cannot explain to you or to your listeners why the United States government is more set on the sanctions than the Europeans are, but certainly I don't see any serious push to have those sanctions removed here in the United States. But part of the reason why the whole debate about sanctions is so depressing is because they did provide Mugabe with a convenient excuse. Mugabe claimed that the problems of the country had to do with sanctions. But, I mean, those sanctions were against individuals and companies owned by those individuals, not against the Zimbabwean people. And that is a very important distinction that needs to be kept in mind.
That was senior policy analyst Marion Tupi of the Washington-based Cato Institute for Global Liberty and Prosperity. He was speaking with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele.
A group of conservationists is breeding lions in the southern African nation of Zimbabwe in an effort to stave off possible extinction as humans and these great cats fight for land. Sebastian Mofu has been to one of the two breeding sites in Gweru, about 300 kilometers from Harare, and files this report for VOA.
Here at the Antlo Park farm in Gweru, the main business is lion breeding. The African Lion and Environmental Research Trust, or ALET, has more than 100 lions in the program. Gary Jones, who has Antlo Park Farm, says ALET has stepped in because of a drastic drop in the lion population, caused mostly by the biggest predator of all, humans. Human population growth has hemmed lions into ever smaller territories.
The wild population of lion has plummeted from about 250 to 260,000 35 years ago, to a current estimate ranging between 18 and 30 or 32,000. So you can see the numbers have declined horribly. It comes through human population growth. So the future for the lion is actually looking very bleak at the moment as humans encroach into their natural environment as our population expands.
Antlo Park Farm is one of two sites ALET has set up in Zimbabwe. Another site is in Zambia. Jones says the drop in the lion population affects the entire ecosystem and says other African nations are seeing the disastrous effects of this.
There are countries, particularly in Central and North Africa, where the lion population has reached a critical level. Burundi, for instance, do not have any lions whatsoever in their national parks. They're very, very desperate to have lions reintroduced back into their national parks, because you take the apex predator out of the equation and suddenly you get all funny things happening with the balance of nature. You get overstocking of these prey species. You get disease coming through into these populations of prey species. That's exactly what's happening in Burundi.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says wild animals are threatened when farmers try to protect their plants or livestock from predators. Rene Chudek, a FAO official responsible for wildlife and forestry in Southern Africa, says his organization has set up a human wildlife toolkit that some African nations are using to reduce conflict between humans and wildlife.
So then we are trying to explain to the people what is the behavior of lions, how do they act. So it's a kind of, you know, building capacity of people to assess the situation, land use planning, not to put their fields just on a pathway of elephants or a corridor. In fact, the Human Wildlife Toolkit is a kind of instrument that the extension workers can use with the communities, explain to them behavior of wildlife, then show them what are the risky behaviors, how they should, you know, plan for their fields.
That way, FAO hopes conflict between humans and wildlife is reduced, and that these threatened species can again flourish. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Gweru, Zimbabwe.
And in sports news, Premier League champions Dynamo say they are ready to defend their title in the new soccer season, which starts on March 7th. The team has acquired some new players to boost its chances of retaining the cup. Dynamo's chairman, Kenny Mubaiwa, spoke with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye on the team's preparations for the new season.
I think we have prepared well for the new coming season, and the season is starting on the 7th of March.
Have you been able to acquire any new players this season? And if so, can you give us a rundown of who you have acquired to boost up your team ahead of this new season?
Yes, we did. We've got God knows Murwira, Kelvin Mbulagi, Dominic Chungwa, Tendai Teaonga, Robin Chizamba. Those are the players that we acquired for the new season.
But we've also seen you losing some of your experienced players to some clubs like Caps United and other clubs in the Premiership. How is that for Dynamos? Is that not going to weaken your team?
It was by choice. We said that these players, we're not going to sell them again. We didn't want them. They are not in our plan. So we let them go when their contract expired. It's not like we lost them, but it was our decision to let them go. We are happy. We're not worried about them.
And how long are the contracts that you've now signed with some of these players? You mentioned that you were looking for a younger crop of players. Tell us a little bit about that.
A minimum of 2 years is the contract that we've been signing. And we said no to any contract which is below 2 years, a year or so. We're not accepting that. But our aim is to win the league here local. Then 2016, we represent Zimbabwe in the Champions League, and we are hoping to go as far as the final. So that is why we said we must sign players for a minimum of 2 years so that they'll be able to play for the Champions League next year, because we've been having some problems with players that sign one-year contract and come end of the year, we need to renegotiate with them again, then we start having some problems. But this time, they've said no.
And that was Dynamo's chairman, Kenny Mubaiwa, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye earlier on.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts, Praxidis Jeremiah and Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye, will reach out to you on the Women's Forum to discuss issues affecting women in the country.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Expelled former ZANU-PF stalwart Didmus Mutasa says the center of power has moved in the party as pages of suspected Joyce Mujuru allies continue.
A Bulawayo High Court judge has reserved judgment in a case where an official in President Robert Mugabe's office has taken over a farm in Matabeleland South.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.